There is an ancient Yekish custom that when you sing at the Seder, you stand around the table and everyone holds hands. So it's a good way of waking everyone up. We're all invited to stand, and I'll teach you this song. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu Baruch Shenatan Torah Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael Baruch Hu Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu Baruch Shenatan Torah Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael Baruch Hu. Let's hear you. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu Baruch Shenatan Torah Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael Baruch Hu. Ay, ay, ay. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu Baruch Shenatan Torah Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael Baruch Hu. Ay, ay. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu Baruch Shenatan Torah Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael Baruch Hu. Now you guys all know the tune. Okay, Baruch HaMakom. This is a blessing intro to the Seder. This is like a blessing on learning Torah. Baruch HaMakom. Blessed is the omnipresent. Baruch Hu. So I heard a beautiful vort. I don't like telling vorts, but this one has a very good meaning. Eliyahu, I'll get to you in a second.
A vort is a
Tvar Torah? A vort is a quasi-Tvar Torah. It's a nice thought. So why do we call Hashem the omnipresent? Baruch HaMakom. So Rashi says, because Hashem is the place of the world. Meaning Hashem made space for the world. Hashem is all-encompassing. He minimized himself. He made room for the world. He is the place of the world. The world isn't his place. He made space for the world. But there was a man named Joel. I don't remember his last name. And he once told me, Song Dvar Torah I heard from him. He told me, he said, when you approach a place, so sometimes you approach the place from the south and you see the meadows. Sometimes you approach it from the north and you see it from the hilltops. Sometimes you approach it from the east and you see the woods. Sometimes you approach it from the west and it seems barren. Different angles you approach the same place, it seems different, even though it's all the same place. That's the Ribono Shel Olam. At different times in life, Hashem seems different to us. There are times that Hashem seems like a warrior. He's fighting wars for us. There are times that he seems like an old man, sometimes like a young man. We see Hashem differently as we age. We see him differently. We have to remember he's a constant. He's like a place. He's like a place that's a constant. We shift, so we see him differently. Elio, yes, sir. What were we going to ask?
I've been seeing it so many times.
To wake you up. Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, blessed is omnipresent, blessed is here. You'll notice we say the word Baruch four times. Four is the key word of the Seder. There are four terms of redemption, right? That's where we get this idea of four for the Seder. There are also four times that the Torah describes, we will tell over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And our tradition is that this teaches us there are four different styles you'll have to use depending on your child. You have to match the story to the kid's intellect and understanding and background. So, Baruch Shantan Torah Moisele Baruch Hu, this is like a blessing on learning Torah. You're about to talk Torah in the Agadah. Keneged arba banim divrat Torah. The Torah speaks corresponding to four different sons. And here again, we have a very important theme. It's a vort, but it's an important theme. Many, many years ago, not before any of you were born, but when all of us were much younger, I taught my first class to Mahon Meir. What happened was I'd walk by the Machon. I'm telling you guys these stories because I see you guys are dozing off. My real Seder, I don't tell these stories. But I see you guys are having a hard time staying awake, so I'm going to have to tell you stories to keep you with me. I was I used to walk by the Machon every night. I stopped in and I told Rav Listman, hey, I come right by here. When I was in the States, I used to teach. If you ever need a teacher, I could teach a class. So one time I come in, I used to do this periodically every 2-3 months, and I'd say, if you ever need a teacher, I walk by her every night. So one night I come in and he says, great idea. I have just the group for you. Tonight, we have a group of guys. I'll send them up to you. I'll call you later. I'll tell you what it's all about. I said, fine. He said, can you have a group of guys over? I said, yeah. So he calls me up. He says, okay, the guys are going to come. These are guys that are on a Bnei Akiva tour. They're all students in Europe and university. And they came here for this tour of Israel. Many of them don't observe any Torah and mitzvot. But they're all Jewish. And they came for this tour of Israel for 2 weeks during their college studies. And then they said they want some Torah. And the only time they could show up is tonight. And in a nutshell, they're showing up when we don't have any staff here. So you could teach them a class. I said, did they have a class before? He said, no. Will they have a class after? Probably not. So this is the only Torah they have before they go back to university and their whole visit in Israel. I said, right. Good luck. We'll send you pizza. He said, oh. So, yeah, it was the Machon covered the pizza, yeah. It was my first class here, right? See, I've kept it up ever since, right? So, I'm preparing. I'm trying to think, what do you tell college students who have left secular life, going back to secular life, and I have 1 or 2 hours, and that's the only Torah they're going to get? So, I prepared this idea and that idea, and 5 minutes before they showed up, I decided I didn't like anything I prepared. So, I did what every good Jewish boy does. I called my father. And I said, Abba, here's the story. Our group guy's coming. What do you think I should tell him? So much for telling Rav Listman anytime you want me to teach a class, right? When push came to shove, I didn't know what I was supposed to tell these guys. So my father said to me, tell them, number one, you might go all kinds of places in life. You have to know that the Torah is there waiting for you. It could be that right now you're at a place in your life where you don't really understand Torah or it doesn't resonate with you. Tell them that Torah has different levels and different themes and that at every stage in life, the Torah is waiting for you. And if you aren't connecting today, that doesn't mean you can't connect tomorrow. There are different levels and there are different themes. And you have to know that the Torah is waiting for you. My father, I thought that was such an important message. Afterwards, I figured out how to give the class to them. But that message, that's the message, Kineged Arba Banim Dibra Torah. That's the vort. The Torah speaks to 4 different kids. That means you don't know if your kid's going to be a genius or a dunce. You don't know. You know, you could pray that your kid will have brains. And then suddenly you discover that it doesn't work. I mean, I remember one of our kids, we'd walk with him, and he'd walk straight into a pole. You're laughing. By the 4th time it happened, I looked at my wife and I said, okay, we're going to have to make this work. And then it got worse. One time, we were walking holding the kid's hand, and he suddenly tugs at my hand, and he goes, Abba, Abba. And I say, what? And the kid says, there was a pole, and I didn't walk into it. Oh, boy. Okay, so then, you know, and I'm thinking this is what he's celebrating, right? Then the kid showed me, a year or two later, that he can do, like, fantastic mathematics. He has brains. Right? The kid was like 6 or 7 and he's already calculating things. We didn't know how he was able to figure it out. He had a head, but somehow at a younger age, it didn't click not to walk into poles, okay? But we didn't know that then, right? At that age, we said to ourselves, as much brains as Hashem gave him, we will love him and work with him, right? That's our job as parents. At that point, we didn't know. We were really convinced that, who knows, you know, whatever. As much as, you know, each kid according to their level. You guys are laughing. I'm serious. As a parent, you don't know where your kids will be holding. You don't know what level of understanding, what IQ. Some people have children that have special needs, and some people have children. They could still be wonderful and contributing members of society. Brains is not the only function in life. You know, it's a tool. And if you have it, you use it. And if Hashem decided that a person is challenged in that way, so then you have to help them and help them succeed. That's your job as a parent. Comes the Torah and says, there are 4 children. So we like to think those are 4 ages. Those are 4 stages. But not necessarily. Children have different tendencies and we have to work with them. So that's why the Agada says, and that's why the Torah says, there are 4 styles of telling over the story tonight. So you have the Chacham, the wise son. What is he saying? He comes and he breaks it down. He says, okay, I want to understand. I hear that there are mitzvos that are testimonies, that the mitzvah testifies to something that happens. I hear there are statutes. I hear there are ordinances, mishpatim, set laws that Hashem commanded you. So you break it all down to him. All the laws of Pesach. And you got to sit with him, even though sometimes when a kid's smart, it's annoying because he's got another question and another question and another question. Yeah, I knew he'd raise his hand. And you sit with him and no going out for dessert. The end, the last halacha in Pesach is that you don't go off for dessert. You sit down after the Seder and you sit down and you answer more questions your kids have. Right, you sit with them, you keep going. Rashama Omer, what does a wicked son say? And you'll notice that in the wicked son's question, he's already framing things. That's one of the dangerous things in life, framing. I'll give you an example. If I were to say, Shmendrik over here, who's sitting next to me, what an annoying guy. Every time he will raise his hand and ask a question, everyone will feel like, oh, what an annoying guy Shmendrik is. But if I say, Shmendrik is brilliant, he makes the class alive. He asks the question that enriches everyone. Every time he raises his hand, everyone thinks to themselves, wow, Shmendrik's going to ask something. We better pay attention. You framed it. When the wicked son comes and says, what's all this hard work that you guys are doing? He's saying two things. He's made the Seder into a toil instead of being fun. And he's made it into you doing, and I don't even know if I'm in. And those are two problematic things in his question. Yes, Benny?
Why are we telling the kids how to answer the kids' questions? Are the kinds of kids that are at the Seder?
Right. Maybe kids have to know that they have a choice. And they can decide how they'll evolve. Maybe this is also educational. Maybe a child also has to know that they...
Putting the Russia card on the table.
Yes. I don't know about that. Sometimes a kid has to know what to stay away from. Part of the answer to the Russia is educational too. Meaning what we're saying is, first of all, we're saying he's at the table. We didn't kick him out of the house. You know, more than once I've had to convince parents not to kick their kids out of the house. It's a pretty phenomenal thing. People think that's an option in chinuch. Shouldn't be an option. Work with the kid. The kid is better. The kid has problems. You're the parent. Work with him. I'm not saying there aren't instances, you know, when a kid pulls a knife on his mother, so then you have a problem, and then it might be time to put him in a place where he won't be pulling knives on people. Could be. But you pray not to get there. Under normal circumstances, as tough as it gets, a kid's supposed to be at home, yeah? Rasha Ma'omer, so what does he say? Ma'avadazot lachem. What's this hard work you guys doing? Lachem ilolo. So he's taught us that he doesn't see himself as a part of this. In removing himself from all of us, he's denied a very basic principle, and that's what we're telling the kids. I want you to know you're a part of something great. You're a part of the Jewish people. Yes, you are a part. I once dated a girl, and she said to me, if a kid misbehaves at the Shabbos table, at some point you tell the kid, being a part of the Shabbos table is a privilege. And if you don't behave, you don't deserve it. You're not going to be at the Shabbos table. And I said to her, I disagree. I was new at this. I was like, mamash new at dating. It's one of the first girls I dated. And I said to her, I think that being a part of the Shabbos table is a given. It's not a privilege. He's a part of the family. It's a given. He's at the Shabbos table. He misbehaves. There can be a time that a kid's overtired and he's messing the table for everyone. So there can be circumstances where you tell a kid, hey, you're overtired. Finish eating and go to bed. You need to sleep. That's legitimate. To tell a kid the Shabbos table is a privilege, it's not a privilege. It's a given. You're a part of this family. You belong at the Shabbos table. We're telling the Rasha, you're ruining something here. When you say, what are you guys doing? You're saying, you guys, I'm not a part of this. That's a problem. Now, that's a theme for all the kids, Benny. All the kids have to know, our approach is, it's not you guys. We're all one. And that's a mistake that parents make in Chinuch today, big time. Is a kid helping me prepare for Shabbos? No, a kid's helping him prepare for Shabbos. I try to point out at the Shabbos table to the kids what they did. Sometimes I ask, who bought the potatoes for the Shabbos? Who bought the potatoes for the meal? Oh, Ima did. So let's say thank you to Ima. Ima bought the potatoes. Who peeled the potatoes for the meal? Right? Make the kids aware. And sometimes kids say, I peeled the potatoes. And I say, thank you, I peeled the potatoes. When a kid says, what are you doing? It's a problem. It's us. It's not you. What does hakei chinav mean? Doesn't mean knock out his teeth. What does hakei chinav mean? Hakei chinav means give him a sour taste on his teeth. Sometimes the way to educate a kid is to give him a sharp answer back. You can't always be nice. Part of chinuch is that sometimes you have to answer him sharply. Hakei et chinav ve'emolo. Give him a sharp answer. Tell him. Bavuz asashem libet zitim imtzayim. Yeah, I'm celebrating. Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. Now what you're insinuating is, li velo lo. You're saying, you're not a part of this, me and not you. Ilo ayasham lo ya nigal. You're saying, there were people who said we're not a part of this, and they really didn't make it out of Egypt. I wouldn't want to be one of those. Right? You're telling the kid, this isn't the way we behave. We're a part of the greater Jewish people. Yes, sir.
The Rasha, why is he even adversary? Is he not like out in the presence?
I don't think so. I think that the Torah is telling us you have a job to educate him too. You're answering him. There are opinions that say you're answering the other kids. You don't even talk to him.
He is at the same age.
Right.
He's child.
I think that we're educating him when we give him this answer. We're telling him that's not the way we talk as Jewish people. We don't look at it as outsiders. You can have questions. You can have arguments. You could say things are annoying. You could say things aren't pleasant. You don't say I'm not a part of this. That's a fundamental point we're telling him. And you're alluding it to him. You're not telling him, buddy, you wouldn't be redeemed. You're saying, yeah, Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. There are times where you answer a kid that way. I mean, let me give you an example. Right? That's a big deal that he came. But, okay, there are two approaches to the Rasha. One approach says the Rasha is trying to ruin it for everyone.
And that's why he came?
Well, he came because there's food. But he's... No, I'm serious. There is one approach among the commentaries that says that the Rasha came because there's food. And what you as a parent have to recognize is that he's about to ruin it for everyone. Because if you look at the Seder as, this is a toil. Why aren't we eating yet? I see yummy food. I haven't eaten those crackers in a long time. Give me some matzah. Why are we going through all this rigmarole and not getting to the food yet? So he's ruining the atmosphere to everyone. Instead of realizing this is a fun Seder, he's ruining it. And that's why you answer the other kids, you're not even talking to him. That's one approach. So maybe that's one type of kid. But then there's another approach which says, no, I'm trying to teach the kid. This isn't the way we talk. Now, it obviously depends on the scenario. Meaning where the kid is holding. I'd rather think that the kid is challenging you and making your life a little difficult the way a teenager would. And right now, this is the part of him that's coming to the surface. And you're going to help him realize this isn't the way to behave. I would much rather think that that's what's happening. And I think both are true. There are definitely kids that reach a point where they're at it to destroy it for other people. And then you have to make sure the other kids don't get destroyed by them. But I definitely think that most of the time that's not the case. Most of the time. You'd be surprised at how the toughest kid needs a hug. Specifically the toughest kid. It's very often when you answer him toughly, then you're playing into the spiral that he's set up for himself his whole life. I had a kid start hitting me as I was teaching 8th grade. And as he was punching me, he said, if you touch me, I will sue you for child abuse.
Nice kid.
So what, does he look like this?
And I hugged him. I hugged him. I held his hands. I thought, if he gets away with this, I'm going to destroy the class. There goes all the discipline for the rest of the year. If a kid can punch his teacher and threaten him as he's doing it. So I grabbed his hands and I hugged him and I said, we're going to go to the police right now and the whole class will testify that you attacked me and I did not hit you back, but you will spend the rest of your life with a criminal record for attacking a teacher. Now let's go. And I took him out of the class. And now, I had to win in front of the class, right? Mm-hmm. Once we were outside, he was in tears. I hugged him. I didn't take him to the police. We remained friends. We were able to work together. There's an aspect where if he's going to destroy it for everyone, I can't let him get away with it. And on the other hand, once we left the classroom, I hugged him. I didn't fight back. Coming back to our Tam. So there's a kid who's at a stage where he doesn't know how to break it down like the Chacham. What does he say? Mazut, what's going on here? Dad, what's the Seder? What happened tonight? V'amatalav, you tell him, because God said, Hashem Yitzayim B'tavdim, tell him a very simple story. And this is what I tell my 4-year-old and my 5-year-old. I say, there was once a very bad man. His name was Paro, and he hit me. And he made it very hard for Abba. And he would hit me, and it was really hard. And every night, I'd come home, and it was hurting because of all the ways he hit me. And then Hashem did this great miracle, and Hashem took me away from him. He lived in a place called Mitzrayim, and Hashem brought me here to Israel. And the kid's so happy. Nice story, right? Took all of 20 seconds. He heard the story. He understood. That's what he can understand. Hashem took us out powerfully out of Mitzrayim. And then you have a kid who doesn't even know what to ask. At Ptachlo, you start the conversation. Shneimar, as the verse says, you initiate and tell the kid on that day. Here's what Hashem did for me. How do you tell the kid? You tell me, see this? Okay, so we were in Egypt. This is what we were eating. And you want to smell that, Mark? Smell it. He cried over this already. Smell it. If you sit and smell it for a little bit, you'll see it brings tears to your eyes. You know how much we cried in Mitzrayim? You know how much? Not only children were crying, the parents were crying. Did you ever see your Rabbi Nima cry? Could you imagine that the adults were crying in Mitzrayim? And then Hashem quickly came and made so many miracles. He made the water turn to blood. He made frogs come in. He took us out of Mitzrayim. He made how many plagues? You started the conversation with the kid. You'll see this when you say parsha with the kids. You have the kids that you ask them, what's the parsha? And the kid goes, could you ask everyone else first? They'll remind me and then I could talk. Right? There are kids that they don't remember. So if you start it, then you can get them into the conversation. You might think, let's start the conversation already. Tomorrow, Rosh Chodesh, right? On Tuesday. Talmud lomar b'yomu, that's why the Torah says no. On that day. Yibi yomu yichol mibod. Yom talmud lomar b'avuzeh, that's why the Torah says no. You point to this. You want to talk to kids, you got to show them something. B'avuzeh lo amalti lebashash yesh matzah mor munchin efanecha. The mitzvah to tell over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is when we have the matzah here, we have the maror here. Okay, now we're going to start the other beginning of the story. The other beginning of the story is, we tell the kids, Mitchilav, Devadas Ha, you have a tenu. Initially, our forefathers used to be pagans. So the kids know this part of the Seder goes like this. I say, you know what Saba used to do? No, not the Saba you know. The other Saba. His Saba. He used to take a bottle. And he used to daven to it in the morning. I say, please, can you please make it that I get a good job? And you know, my Safta is sick. Can you please cure her? Please, I'll fill you with water. And he'd stand there praying to the bottle. And then he'd take the bottle and put it somewhere careful and say, kids, respect this. He might cure all of us. So I start making believe what it's like to worship to an idol. And the kids look at me like I'm nuts. And I tell them, you have to understand, this is what Avraham Avinu's father did. This is where we, the Jewish people, were holding. That's what they believed in. And you know what? I don't know if we should eat all this meal. Let's feed him some of this food. He might be hungry. Okay, so now the kids start hearing what it means to be a pagan. And then I say, Mitchilav de'avdazra yu'avotenu. Initially, our forefathers, they used to worship idols. I explained to the kids what that means. But you know when all that changed? When Hashem brought us close. Hashem said, let me teach you what I want from you. The verse says, Yeshua said to the nation, this is what you guys asked me, Elio. Where do we do this part? Where do we tell the kids, hey, we were once pagans? This is where we do it. Now again, between you and me, I don't tell the kids this. But I do try to give over the story in a way that they understand. Doesn't matter how down you are, you can still climb back up. One of the themes of the night, the question of the Rasha, the question of we were once pagans, one of the themes is Hashem's waiting for us. Hashem gave us the tools to climb back up. Pesach is the greatest story of, what do they call them? The greatest redemption story, the greatest survival story, the greatest story of hope. On Pesach, you have the idea of hope. You can make it. Yeshua tells the nation, come, Hashem, so says Hashem, remember, your forefathers used to live on the other side of the Euphrates. We all come from Terach. What did Terach do for a living? He sold idols. Buddhas, yeah? Some little idol. The Abdu Elohim Acherim, they worshipped all kinds of other gods. Hashem says, I took your forefather Abram from the other side of the Euphrates. I took him throughout the land of Canaan. I made him have so many children. I gave him Yitzchak. I gave Yitzchak two children, Yaakov and Esav. Why do we mention at the Seder that Esav got Mount Seir? And then Yaakov and his children went down to Mitzrayim. Why do we mention that, Seder? Why does it matter? So here again, I'm telling it to you from your level. To the kids, we say it on their level. Why are we the chosen people? Why are we the chosen people?
God chose us.
God chose us when?
Abraham.
Oh. God chose Avram and told him his children would be the chosen ones to come out of Mitzrayim, right? In the Brit Ben Abtarim. Okay. So tell me, please, why isn't Esav the chosen one? I understand Yishmael is the son of the maid. But Esav and Yaakov are twin brothers. Who said it should be Yaakov and not Esav? What makes us chosen? Hello?
Came out of Egypt.
Oh, because in the covenant, Hashem said, your descendants will go down to Egypt, down to a foreign land, be in servitude, come out and inherit the land of Israel. Our rights are sealed in by this night. Our rights to be the continuation of Avraham is because of what we just mentioned. Because Esav had a peaceful existence on Mount Seir. We suffered through Egypt. That's where we fulfilled that part of the prophecy that Hashem said, your descendants will suffer. They'll come out and inherit the land of Israel. We fulfilled that. So that's why we mentioned that here. To tell the child, yes, we are the continuation of Avraham. Can we move forward, gentlemen?
Yes.
At this point, we're going to do what we do with little kids. We're going to rush forward so that the little kids don't fall asleep. Blessed is the one who kept his promise to Israel. Blessed is he. Just as Hashem promised Avraham, he will take the Jews out of Mitzrayim, so too Hashem promised him that the Jewish ember would forever continue. And that's what we're about to mention. This is one of the most exciting parts of the Haggadah. The idea that Hashem repeatedly keeps his promise and keeps the Jewish people alive. Hashem calculated to fulfill what he had promised Abraham in the covenant. Hashem said, your descendants will be foreigners in a land for 400 years. So from Yitzhak onward, we didn't own our territory. We were foreigners in the land for 400 years. Hashem says, ultimately I will judge the nation who they serve. And then they will leave with great possessions. And now we're up to the Vehisha Amda, which is a very important song. How this covenant has held us up throughout the nations. When we sing the song, we honor it by raising a glass. And if we're going to honor the glass, then we cover the bread, we cover the matzah. Yes, sir.
Wasn't it a little after Yitzchak was born that Abraham sold parts of the land of Israel? So it's not supposed to be soaking that Yitzchak's born the next year, and the land's not Abraham's anymore.
Okay.
He made a peace treaty.
Right. He made a. But that wasn't exactly when Yitzchak was born.
Good question. At the meal, Bezat Shem, we'll have time. Now, I don't think you should sing the Shweki Vehisha Amda. The Shweki Vehisha Amda Lavoteinu. That's not what we're going to sing. Pesach is about tradition. Shweki is a nice song. Sing it the rest of Pesach. At the Seder, sing the traditional too. Vehisha Amda Lavoteinu Velah.